On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk. Thank you for joining our On Point podcast, brought to you by our friends at Insurance Journal. And today we're talking with Kabir Syed, who's the CEO and founder of Risk Match, and those who can surf safely, it's riskmatch.com. And we're going to talk a little bit about, about the commercial insurance marketplace and the incredible amount of investment that's coming into the industry to change, disrupt, evolve, maybe more of a revolution than evolution, the way that insurance is manufactured, distributed, serviced, all parts of the insurance ecosystem. So with that intro, Kabir, thanks again for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Peter.
Okay, sir. So why don't we start out just maybe give us a quick thumbnail on Risk Match, you know, how it was founded, why it was founded, and what you guys do?
Yes, you know, it is a very interesting situation for us. It was founded on frustration. And I can totally relate to what brokers go through and agents. I worked for a very large broker for about 18 years. And whether you're small or large, the frustration is the same, except the larger companies have more money to throw at it. You know, it's such an old world industry. Before I go to that, you know, our entire philosophy is brokers and agents have to exist because the product is complex and it needs to be advised on. And that's why when brokers and agents do work, it takes a lot of time for them to find out who should we place it with. It can't be, I know a guy who knows this guy. It's just not possible anymore. The second part is from the angle of placing a policy, whether you source a risk or place a policy, you know, almost 25 people touch it and it takes 8 weeks. And as an industry, you can't survive by just adding bodies. So from our point of view, we said, how can we make this smoother? Size really does not matter. The smallest broker and the largest broker do exactly the same things, which is do it manually and do it over and over again every year. And that is very frustrating, which gets us to the point, right? If you see, all of us are in this industry, and we never, when we were growing up, we never said, I'd like to be an insurance broker or an underwriter. But once we start in this industry, we never leave it because it's an industry that is formed on close relationships. Your clients become your friends. Your colleagues become your friends, and they are together for the entire period of time. And that's what is really fascinating about our industry. The frustration of trying to find insight, frustration of trying to place a policy, frustration in trying to service your client faster because they have become your friends. And that frustration led us to create Risk Match. We said, why should only the largest of the large brokers or carriers have all the insight? Why can't it be that data can be democratized?
Okay, so I heard you speak at a conference and you were going through the litany of information that's required to underwrite a piece of business. And it just takes a lot of time, but also the information is in disparate places. Sometimes it's a PDF file, sometimes it's an Excel document, sometimes it's some hard copy somewhere. What are you doing to sort of bring that all together? And the buzzword, if I'm wrong with this buzzword, please say so. But the idea of big data working harder for the insurance industry to move that frictional cost, reduce the time, is that the proper way to look at this?
Absolutely, right. So InsurTech is nothing new. It's happened in so many different industries. It's just that it's coming to our industry now. And the reason is our industry has been insurance, whether it's brokers, agents, MGAs, or carriers. You know, it's been named as one of the industries with the highest frictional cost, which means the amount of time we spend and the number of people who touch from the start to the beginning. So think of how our agents and brokers work. You get your risk documents from whether it's a small barbershop or the largest commercial company. You'd get it in paper. It could be Excel files of where the locations are. It could be PDFs. It could be PowerPoints. We take that, put it together, make it a little bit nicer, and send it off to the underwriter. And we send it five times in five different emails. The underwriter then takes it and puts it into their system, rekeys the data in, and it's very manual. And then says, I can do this, but I have a few questions, which goes back as a phone call or email. You reply again back and forth, and finally you say yay or no. That takes between 2 to 8 weeks. Would you be, if you were to go to shop on Amazon or somewhere else, it's all A's. There's nothing rocket science about this. It's just A's of approach. If you were to go to Amazon, would you wait 2 to 8 weeks to say, what is the price and would you sell me something? Similar things are happening on our side right now. So if you think of where things are changing, so essentially, we are very manual. We're very inefficient, and we take a lot of time. Now, do we have expertise? Absolutely. I mean, what we know about risk, what we know about people's behaviors to risk, and their response to how much should they buy, technology does not know that. We know it as an industry, and it is sitting individualized with each of our producers, placers, CSRs. So we're saying, is there a better way to actually solve the administrative burden of doing this? So what's changing? If you think of what's changing here, first of all, the way we access, you can't, if you see how we sell insurance, is we knock on a door and say, give me a shot at your BOP policy or workers' comp. Why not say to them, here's what, there are 10,000 restaurants, here's what restaurants buy. That's a better way to approach it. Otherwise, it's always going to be an expense. The second part we're saying is, if I have a question as an insured, do I have to call you? Can I not go and look at something and ask a question? So we are basing our entire approach on relationship to say, you need to call me. Can certain things be self-serve? Can they be solved easier? So that's the access problem. Why do we need to be bound by a physical bricks and mortar? So that's the second part of it. The third part of it is the product. The insurance product, and I'm not sure why, it's always a yearly or a three-year product. It's very complex. If I look, I've been in insurance for 25 years. If I look at my homeowner's policy, I cannot understand a word for it. And I've been in insurance. So why can't we simplify things? And lastly, the players, right? You had a broker, you have an agent, you have a wholesaler, you have an MGA, you have a carrier, a reinsurance broker. So imagine the cost of insurance if it hops off every little place over there. So we're saying the players are going to change over a period of time. The way they distribute a policy is going to change. Should the broker exist? Absolutely. I mean, if you think of Risk Match, we're just one of those 1,500 companies that have come on board. But we are saying it is absolutely necessary for a broker to exist or an agent to exist, except we need to be a much more efficient in placing it, accessing it, and distributing it. Once that efficiency comes into place, there's no number of insure tech companies that can change that. And we completely 100% believe in that.
Okay. Well, you outlined in your talk, Kabir, a lot of what you called rising stars in distribution. There's even more insure techs and other elements of the business, different tools for carriers, different tools that are direct to consumer. As you mentioned in this talk, which was, I believe, in September of 16, you mentioned there were 1,100 startups in the last year that had received $2.6 billion in funding. I've heard that the funding has slowed a bit, maybe just to see how some of these do, because, not everybody's going to make it. Organizations like Risk Match that are in the distribution space, do they all share your philosophy that brokers have a future?
You ask a very, very interesting question, and I love answering these questions. So there are two parts, right? The funding hasn't really slowed to overall. It has slowed to new entrants. What they're trying to do now is they're going to give more money to successful startups in the past 3 years. That's how they're looking at it. So if you look at Trove, if you look at MBrokers or Insurions, where they have shown traction, they're pouring more money into that. So the not refinancing, the Series A or the lead, next lead of investment is going much higher. And if you see the way this thing has evolved is, most of the funding went to distribution because that's the biggest cost for a carrier. Brokers are not embracing it yet. Carriers are, because it's a much larger dollar amount that gets distracted or displaced if they don't change. So second set of companies, so a lot has happened on distribution, whether it's a platform or go direct to the insured. And almost all of it has been in the smaller space. The part that is going to change is in terms of underwriting and product. Now, underwriting, what you call big data, there's so much availability of big data. If you look at any application right now for insurance, it has between 60 and 120 questions. That's a lot of questions to ask. And it's very frustrating for a broker to do that. So a lot of dollar amount is now being spent to actually pre-fill that. And what I mean by that is, if you say the address of a location, you can buy anything about that building from elsewhere. You don't have to ask that question. Because, you know, we have our office is located in Greenwich. If people ask me, what is it made of? I have to ask my landlord, and he gives whatever he knows. I don't know if it's right, but that's all I have. But if you buy this from multiple sources, it's probably much more accurate. There are lots of places you can buy that. So people are pre-filling that. There's a company in Florida, for example, an insurance company called HCI. It's a public company. They ask two questions to write your homeowners, your last name and your address. The last name is to find your credit risk, and your address is essentially to take a picture to see if you have a pool, and they will quote you two questions. So because they are buying all of this massive amounts of data from elsewhere. Now, it'll take a little bit more time for other insurance carriers to catch up to that. Maybe it's not 60 questions for a BOP policy. Maybe it's going to be 18 questions. And some of the questions are very mundane. What's your industry? Where are you located? So we're like, you have a name of a company. You can buy all of the data. You do not have to ask a person to pre-fill that. So that's what is changing in terms of big data. In terms of flexibility and tiers of product, what big data, so let me, before I move on, what big data does essentially is it gives a more accurate picture of the risk and for underwriting. Now, all of our listeners will know this. Underwriting is a science as well as an art, because if you get the same risk from broker one versus broker two, you're going to perceive the risk slightly different for the same company, because it depends for a carrier. It's like an airline price. If you go and buy yourself from an airline site, you get one price. If you buy it from an American Express or Hotwire, you'll get a completely different price. So part of the thing is, how does a carrier view pricing depending on, you know, how much penetration you have in a geography, in an industry, through a distribution channel or through a type of a broker or an association? So it seems to have a lot more of art now. Now they're bulking up the science piece to say, can we get more accurate? So they're good and bad to big data. Right. For the product side, what we are trying to see, what the industry is trying to understand is, can we not have flexible terms, which is in terms of why do I need to have take it or leave it as a package policy? Can a person not check in? Like if you buy a car, right, there's a base car, there's options. You can pick and choose your options. It might take a little bit of time, but you can pick and choose your options. Why does the policy have to be take it or leave it all? So that's the flexibility of the terms. The second part is like a lease, right? Why does a policy have to be 1 year? We seem to have done it on the personal line side, but we have not done it on the commercial side. So is there a model that is being used on the personal line side? Can it also be on the commercial line side? And third part is, can we switch on and off the coverage? Now, it's not going to happen for everything. It's going to happen for certain lines of things, switch on and off. So overall, I think the market for insurance is going to rise dramatically, because you never insured your computer or your bicycle or your skis. So that part will actually go up. However, if the amount of capital that is there out there keeps adding to it, the price goes down. It's got nothing to do with the broker. It's the availability of the capital and the number of carriers. So an example I use is, if you have 52 carriers going from New York to San Francisco, the price is going to be low. If you want to go from New York to Grand Rapids, it's probably the most expensive ticket because there are only three carriers serving it or three airlines. So it's also the capacity and the seating availability.
Yeah, it's such an interesting, you know, such an interesting way to look at all this. To ask the question, why do we call salespeople producers? Why is that a good consumer-facing term? You're asking a lot of really good questions. Why do we have an annual policy? Why are they so incomprehensible? Just over time, I believe we're insurance people are incredibly good at technical things and not very good at perhaps the consumer side. I mean, I don't mean to disparage them because there are a lot of things that can go wrong in the industry if you don't underwrite properly. But I think these disruptors, as I look at all of these logos that were in your presentation, you know, hundreds of them, that they bring kind of a fresh look to things like you're describing. Like, why can't I insure my car when I'm driving it? Why can't I insure it at the pump? Why not have life insurance underwritten in 15 seconds instead of 15 days or a month? You know, why not? Why can't it be done? I tell you, Kabir, on the life side, the life insurance side, it's the new generation is not buying coverage the way baby boomers did. They're not putting up with waiting weeks for a blood test and all that. The disruption there is pretty profound, you know, in terms of the speed at which they can write life insurance. So, well, I was going to get to what perhaps some of our listeners are thinking right now, which is, okay, so you've mentioned, you know, the policy evolving, the terms evolving, taking away some of those questions, et cetera. What will be the role of the traditional broker going forward, you know, in light of all this new technology capability? And moreover, what should they be thinking about doing? I mean, I know I've seen recently that traditional insurance carriers, very large ones, have been investing in some of this new technology, some of these startups. They've been investing themselves. What should an agent or broker do?
Two parts. One is we have to get nimble. We cannot ask it to be filled multiple times. When I say nimble, is we've got to get a little faster to acquire and place. Now, part of it is we as brokers and agents should have better processes. And we have to buy data or platforms, whatever, it doesn't really matter. And I'm not trying to pitch risk match. I'm just trying to say we as an industry have to do this. The second part is because we spend so much time trying to aggregate it and push it to the carrier that we don't spend time servicing it, advising it. The second part is we have to be more advisory oriented rather than just say, I will place it with my buddy. Because it's not going to work any longer. Placing with your, I'm not saying your buddy is wrong. All I'm saying is you have to give options and say, here's the good, here's the bad, here are my suggestions. So more advisory, because this is the only industry, think of construction as an example. This is the only industry where if you're building a house, you go to the architect to design the house, and then you go to the contractor to build the house. Insurance is the only industry where the contractor and the architect is exactly the same. Now, that creates a little bit of a problem. So we're saying whatever you want to do, you have to make the automation of the task much faster. There's certain things we shouldn't be doing. Don't just say that we have done it for 150 years because you'll go the Kodak way. There are 38,000 brokers. Do we need 38,000? Absolutely for geography. What happens if people start buying fewer? What happens when the price of a policy goes down? Because the way we are paid is through commissions. So if you had, let's say, $10 million of revenue last year, and this year the market goes down by 5%, for the same, if you keep 100% retention, you're $5 million short. Mm-hmm. So that creates a little bit of a half a million dollars short. It creates a little bit of a problem. So we're saying you have to get more efficient, number one. You have to get more advisory oriented or consulting oriented to say good or bad. And third part is you will have to have metrics on your relationships, whether with a carrier or with a client. And you need to be able to do it in multiple channels. It can't be that my office is closed today and or after 7 o'clock. Well, all of us work. If I have to have a question, maybe I can go in and look at my policy and say, does this do this or not, or can we have other things reply for us? It's not necessary that we are only bricks and mortar from 8 to 5 or 8 to 7, whatever the question is. So we need to change the way we have behaved overall. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the new ones will take over, because all that they do right now is ease of distribution and access. That's all it is. So if your value mm-hmm. proposition was, as a broker, I know you and you trust me, somebody provides a cheaper, gives you access all the time, and provides a much more standardized output of what is covered, what's not covered, what you should cover, is going to change the business dramatically.
Okay. So would you rather at this point in time be a carrier, a commercial property casualty carrier today, Kabir, or would you rather be a broker in light of all this change?
I would probably, so that's a very good question. So this is a very interesting time. I think carriers face a lot more disruption than the brokers. Both of them do, but carriers are much larger, so they are looking at it. I would rather be an MGA. So neither of those two, because an MGA does things faster compared to a carrier and access to the broker. If you're a broker, you have to have multiple channels, and I have not seen yet a broker who's across every channel. Either we do feet on the street kind of an approach, or we do completely a digital approach. We don't seem to have a merger of those two or servicing markets. It's like, you can go and buy from Walmart, or you can just go and buy from Jet.com. Both are available. Both are owned by the same company.
Okay. All right. Last question. What are some of the perhaps rising stars or stars now that we may or may not have heard of? Do you think that the commercial space, besides RiskMatch, of course, should be paying the most attention to? Like, what are you seeing getting traction, and what part of the business are they in?
Everybody seems to. So there are lots of startups, right? But if you see, the distribution space is where most of them have concentrated on. So mm-hmm. Simply Business, that was bought by Travelers. It's not yet in the U.S., but they will launch very quickly. CoverHound started in personal lines, and now it's commercial lines. Insley, it's an underlying system. MBroker. So there are lots of companies, but most of them are purely on the digital self-use. So here's the best part, right? We as agents and brokers go and spend time with our clients and take the information, type it into a carrier portal. All of these other companies are saying, we don't want to do the work. You fill it in yourself, and we'll take X percentage of the income. Mm-hmm. So like, why can't we do this as an industry? So I think the next generation, the new generation of companies, which will have artificial intelligence, is coming very, very soon. And when I say that, is the next 3 to by the end of this year and next year, you'll see automated machine learning and intelligence that is suggesting things rather than a person answering a question. So imagine if you have 5 people who have to answer your client's question. Here's an artificial intelligence computer that is actually answering the basic questions, and every time it has a question, it learns from it. So I think that is a little scary from an employment standpoint overall. But however, it's not, you don't have to do anything. You just have to teach it, and it comes with a database. It's like we can ask, if you ask RiskMatch, right, what carriers can write this policy? Even though we are not brokers, we know the 1,427 carriers which can write this policy because we have learned from data. So we have to do these kinds of things.
Yeah. So that further puts pressure, does it not, on the value that a agent or broker brings to the table?
Yes and no, right? One of the things we are saying is not all of the carriers have their appetite very laid out very clearly. So one of the problems in our industry is, because they don't lay out our appetite very clearly, it's very difficult for somebody to suggest or recommend you. They only say, I'll write this. If you go to a carrier, the carrier says, I'll write a restaurant, I'll write it in New Jersey, and it should be in a mall, and it should have less than 50 seats, and then it should not have serve alcohol. you go to Connecticut and think that, well, they'll write the same thing. They'll say, nope, I actually write everything. You can serve alcohol in Connecticut. So there are a little bit quirks in our product itself, and we don't create the product. We distribute the product. So I think from my perspective, the risk is in efficiency. But we do have to get efficient, and we have to automate the bottom end. You cannot, as an industry, we cannot serve manually the less than $1,000, less than $5,000 policies in large amounts and be profitable. Because somebody is going to package it very, very well, and then we lose them as clients.
Well, Kabir, I guess I've asked you several last questions. We could talk forever on this, but I just love this topic. I hope that this podcast, as well as some others we've been doing, just sort of open the eyes of some folks who may be thinking status quo and everything's going to be okay. Our company will be okay if we just keep on renewing people. And I think the pace of change. I don't think people can wait to 2018 or 2020 or 2025 anymore. Yeah. It's coming very, very fast. I did want you to touch on, if you would, as we close, the acquisition of RiskMatch by Vertafore earlier this year.
Absolutely. So if you see our underlying philosophy and our driving philosophy is a broker and agent solves problems for the insured. And we completely believe our entire business plan is on that. And Vertafore is a company that literally powers 50% of the entire insurance transaction in the U.S. Not many people know about it, but it is. They have 20,000 brokers and over 20,000 brokers and 1,000 carriers and about 700 MGAs, actually more than 700. So think what these two companies, we are at the leading edge of analytics and they are the backbone of brokers and agents. When you put these two together, the combination creates a fantastic company, which is essential, and we are going to be a subsidiary. It creates a fantastic combination in terms of providing insight and workflow simplification for the 20,000 brokers. Because otherwise, you know, it was very scary for us to see two companies doing the exact same thing, except one is large and one is small. So we said, if we combine these two, you can do it much faster and you can create, you know, one plus one is not two. So these two companies have become together. We still do it for Applied clients. We do it for NextShare clients and clients who are in Salesforce. Because analytics is not dependent on just the underlying platform. Mm-hmm. It's dependent on what you want to do on function and role. So we put those two companies together, and we are a subsidiary of Vertafore at this point, an independent subsidiary of Vertafore.
Okay. And again, you can read more about this acquisition at Vertafore.com or riskmatch.com. Kabir, I really appreciate your time, as our listeners do, and we'll stay in touch, and maybe we can have another recording later this year. Thanks so much for being with us
today. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.